this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that'll determine what the future will bring. I need to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views, the views of our guests, and, well, this evening our guest is John Perkins. And John Perkins has written two bestsellers. The first was Confessions of an Economic Hitman. The second is his most recent book, The Secret History of the American Empire. And John, of course, was recruited into the secret world of intelligence and of the corporatocracy. And the corporatocracy works with intelligence, corporations, banks, International Monetary Fund, World Bank, and similar organizations to actually rule the world. It's an amazing story, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, and now the second book. And I should point out, the Confessions of the Economic Hitman was on the top of the New York Times bestsellers for list for a long period of time. And then, of course, a lot of people said, well, but how could you be the only person who knows this story? There must be other people who've been part of this cabal that runs the world. And where are they? And so John actually was instrumental in getting a second book published where they, in a number of people who'd been associated with this same movement that he was, came forward, and now John has written the third book, The Secret History of the American Empire. Most Americans have a fixed view of what goes on in the world. America is a great nation. We have to defend ourselves against communism. That's why we have to have a powerful military. But is that why we have to spend as much money for our military as all the rest of the world put together? We have to, of course, certainly defend the weaker countries throughout the world. Is that, of course, why we send our agents in to make sure that the people in charge of those countries carry out the biddings of our leaders and our intelligence agencies? Well, right now we have us on the line, Mr. John Perkins, and we're going to explore his book, The Secret History of the American Empire. And ladies and gentlemen, we do have an empire. We have troops stationed in 130 nations. We have over 700 military bases throughout the world. We are an empire. And, of course, this is being run not to help the world, but of course to exploit the natural resources of the world and to maintain almost half of the world's population in abject poverty. Mr. Perkins, thanks very much for being with us again.
Well, it's great to be with you again, Dr. Stan. Thanks for having me.
Well, I certainly appreciate you coming on. I guess this will be the last time we've had you on twice before with this book. But I did want this audience, which is an excellent audience, to hear your story. How is the book doing? Is it doing pretty well?
Yeah, it's been out for, well, about 2 months now. It's been on the New York Times bestseller list at least a couple of those weeks, and it's brought Confessions back onto that list. So it's doing really well. Too early to keep track of sales at this point. I don't really watch things like that very much anyway. But what's gratifying is to know that the American people really do want to know what goes on behind the scenes. They really do want to know the secret history of this empire.
Well, I certainly appreciate it. So I'm going to let you go ahead and tell our listeners what you learned, because you've been on the inside and you're trying to expose what really goes on behind the scenes.
Well, yeah, we really have created this world's first truly global empire in the last few decades, and we've done it primarily without the military, through economics. That's the first in history. And because of that, it's been done pretty much in secret, and those are the things I talk about in The Secret History of the American Empire, my own role in that, and also the stories of many other economic hitmen and jackals, assassins, and also talk a lot about what we can do to change this, because we need to turn it around and create a world that our children will really be proud to inherit from us a sustainable, stable, and peaceful world. And I'm extremely hopeful about that, Dr. Stan. I'm very optimistic that when enough of us understand the truth behind this secret empire, we will insist that our corporation, the corporatocracy, as I call the leaders of who are really running this whole scene, we will convince them to change.
Well, do you think that they will willingly give up their power? You know, power is I think Henry Kissinger said, the greatest aphrodisiac of all. Do you think they'll ever willingly give up their position in power?
You know, I think part of it is redefining what we mean by power, so that right now, we really worship and idolize people with big yachts and private jets, and Fortune magazine lists the highest paid executives and so on and so forth. What I think part of this process is letting people know that who we really will respect are the people who do create a sustainable, stable, and peaceful world. Let them be on the cover of Fortune. Let them be on the list, so that our competition no longer is about who makes the most money, who has the biggest mansions, but rather who's doing most to create a world that we'll be proud to pass on to our children and grandchildren. And there's no greater satisfaction that a human being can experience than to know that we've done something really good for ourselves and our progeny. And so I think we really have to move toward a different concept of what success really means.
Well, I think that I know that you're very sincere about that, and I know that you feel that way, and I wish there were a lot of other people in positions of power who shared your vision. Well, let's go right ahead.
You know, Dr. Stan, one of the stories I tell in The Secret History is about an executive with Mitsubishi, a pretty high-up executive. And at the time, this is a couple of years ago, Mitsubishi was considered to be one of the world's worst destroyers of rainforests. And Rainforest Action Network, a nonprofit organization, went after them to try to get them to change their ways. And it became a pretty personal battle between the founder of Rainforest Action Network, Randy Hayes, and the senior Mitsubishi executive. In the end, Rainforest Action Network won. They've never lost a campaign yet, and they got Mitsubishi to sign this agreement. I was with those two men at a conference of about 30 people a few months after that. And on Saturday night, Randy Hayes and I decided to go up to this hot tub at the top of the hill and drink a couple of beers, looking out over the Pacific Ocean. This is in Southern California. And when we got to the hot tub, we found that the Mitsubishi executive had beat us to it. He was already in the hot tub. And, of course, I don't think he really wanted to, but he invited us in. And so Randy and I took off our clothes.
Hold that thought for just a moment, please.
Okay.
John is telling us about the conflict between one of the wildlife organizations and the head of Mitsubishi, and of course it had to do with the destruction of the rainforest, and so the head of the environmental group had gotten Mitsubishi to actually sign an agreement that they would certainly not continue their aggressive destruction of the rainforest, and this was a rather humiliating defeat for the head of one of the largest corporations in the world. But sometime later they were John, and the head of the environmental group, was about to go into a hot tub. You pick up the story there.
Well, we stripped down and we're in this hot tub with a beer, and there's a full moon over the Pacific, and I'm really kind of anxious. You know, what's going to happen next year? These two men have been at each other's throats until recently. But after a little bit, the Mitsubishi executive raises his can of beer and he says, "I want to thank you, Randy," to the head of Rainforest Action Network. He says, "You know, I have kids, and I expect to have grandchildren, and I want to take them to the Amazon. I want them to see the great forests of British Columbia." And a lot of other executives at Mitsubishi felt the same way and feel the same way. But we didn't dare do anything to change the policies of our corporation until you and your people at Rainforest Action Network brought it to our attention and really forced us to study this issue and made our stockholders and our management look at this seriously. And then we were able to do the right thing. And I think, Dr. Stan, that this is typical, that there's an awful lot of corporate executives out there that would really rather do something than just keep emphasizing windfall profits, making a lot of money for a few already rich investors. They want to do the right thing. They want to do the right thing for their kids and their grandchildren. But we live in this environment where they've been trained all their lives. that what they must do is maximize profits, windfall profits, regardless of the social and environmental costs. And so I think it behooves all of us to turn this thing around. And I think, and I know, we'll find a lot of allies within the corporate world itself.
Well, I certainly hope that, indeed, that you're right. Well, will you, Sydney, just discuss a couple of instances, you know, about what's really going on in the world and how American foreign policy and certainly the power of our intelligence agencies is used to help corporations to control the governments of nations and groups of nations.
Yeah, you know, I think typically, Dr. Stan, what we economic hitmen do, we work many different ways, but the most common is that we will identify a third world country with resources our corporations covet, like oil, and then arrange a huge loan to that country. But the money doesn't go to the country. Instead, it goes from an organization like the World Bank to one of its sisters to one of our corporations to build big infrastructure projects in that country, power plants, industrial parks, things that help a few very rich people in that country get richer, as well as our corporations, but don't help the majority of the people at all because they don't use much electricity. And yet the country's left holding this huge debt that they can't repay. And so at some point we economic hitmen go back and say, listen, you owe us a lot of money, can't pay your debts, give us a pound of flesh. Sell your oil real cheap to oil companies, or vote with us on the next critical UN vote, or send troops in support of ours to someplace in the world like Iraq. Now, in the few instances when we fail, which isn't very often, but when that does happen, then the jackals go in. And these are men, sometimes women, who overthrow the governments who haven't cooperated with us or assassinate their leaders. I failed miserably with Omar Torrijos in Panama, president of Panama. I couldn't corrupt him. I couldn't bring him around. And so the jackals assassinated him. And that's kind of the system that we use. And on the very few occasions when both the economic hitmen and jackals fail, as we did in Iraq, then and only then does the military go in as a last resort. And that's really the way that we've created the world's first truly global empire in the last few decades and in the period since World War II.
Well, I certainly think that people only have to look and see what's happened to see the ultimate effect of this is our corporations dominate governments throughout the world. But, you know, I was very interested in your discussion in your latest book about what had happened during the currency crisis in Southeast Asia in the latter part of the 1990s and certainly the remarks by Professor Joseph Stiglitz, who is certainly one of my favorite economists, about how this whole situation was exploited and that financial crisis was used to force many of the governments to take actions totally deleterious to their positions, and yet those few countries that refused to do what they were told to do survived quite well. Would you want to discuss that? I thought it was a beautiful example of what you're trying to bring out.
Yes, well, Joe Stiglitz, who, as you know, was the chief economist of the World Bank and winner of the Nobel Prize in Economics, he really sums this up beautifully in his book. And, you know, he talks about how the countries that did follow the IMF policy, particularly in Asia, resulted in creating what the 1997 Asian financial crisis, which is also known as the IMF crisis. And these are countries like Indonesia and Thailand and went through some terrible, terrible times. Those that did not go along, particularly China is a great example, they did not follow the program as outlined by the World Bank and did very, very well during this period of time. And Stiglitz, who was right there at the time involved in it, clearly, you know, states that the cause of this was, the cause and effect is if you follow the IMF, you're basically going to get screwed, and that too includes the World Bank. And part of the reason you're going to get screwed is because the money is going to leave your country and go to the big corporations that are the multinationals and not stay within the country. Whereas if you develop programs like the Chinese did that are very different from the IMF and World Bank programs, you're likely to meet success. We've also recently seen this happening in South America, where seven countries out of representing more than 80% of the population of that continent have in the last elections voted for the president who basically said, I'm not going to go along with those IMF and World Bank policies. I'm not going to allow my people and our resources to be exploited anymore. And we're seeing some remarkable things happen in South America as a result of that.
In fact, they're going to form their own independent currency, or at least their own independent trading bloc, aren't they, independent of North America?
Yes, they've been working on that in an independent communications bloc. And yeah, it's very, very exciting what's going on in Latin America. And one of the reasons it's so exciting is that during most of my lifetime, those countries, seven countries in South America, one in Central America, during my lifetime, most of them were run by U.S. puppet dictators. And now they've turned around, and they've gone through very democratic elections and elected men, and in the case of Chile, a woman who is standing up to the corporatocracy and saying, we're not going to allow this to happen anymore. And what else is interesting about that, Dr. Stan, is that some very diverse and groups that traditionally opposed each other came together to make this happen. For example, in Ecuador, the indigenous people and the military have been antagonistic to each other since the time of the conquest, the Spanish conquest. They came together during these recent elections to vote in a nationalistic president. We've seen this in country after country, which I think gives great hope, not only to the United States, but to places like the Middle East, where we tend to think that forces that are so opposed as Sunnis and Shiites and the Jewish people can never come together. I think Latin America has taught us that we can come together, that people like that can come together when they can truly see that it's going to serve their best self-interest to do so, and when the economic hitmen and jackals and U.S. military are brought to a standstill.
Well, I certainly hope and pray that you're right, because what we really need is to give people throughout the world the opportunity to develop their natural resources, to benefit from what they have and from the work of their people. Now, the point that you've made in both of your books is that a significant part of the world lives on about $2 a day. I mean, that what percentage of the world really...
Well, it's more than half of the world. And incidentally... That's roughly the same as they were making 30 years ago, except 30 years ago, half the world's population was considerably less than what half the world's population is today. The world's population has increased a lot in those 30 years.
And, of course, these are really the planned programs to keep the rest of the world really subjugated so we can exploit their natural resources. And the average American, of course, would be highly offended at the thought of this happening. And yet, unfortunately... It really seems to be true, doesn't it?
Well, that's why I wrote the book, because I realized most people living in the United States have no idea that we are the beneficiaries of this empire, of colonialism, of exploitation, and in fact of a new type of slavery, because let's face it, a lot of the people that are making some of the clothes we wear, a lot of the products that we use are essentially living under a new form of slavery. And they're living terribly degraded, impoverished lives. They're suffering terribly so that we can have this lifestyle. And you pointed out earlier that we in the United States are less than 5% of the world's population, yet we consume more than 25% of the world's resources and create more than 30% of its pollution. About all we can say about that, Dr. Stan, is it's a failed model. It's not something you can ask China to replicate with 20% of the world's population, or India, or Latin America, or the Middle East, and we can't even continue doing it. We really must change. We have to change things and turn things around.
Well, you know, things really are beginning to change around and turn around, and certainly the process of globalization, I think, is going to change everything in America and lower the living standards here in America. Now, I would far rather work to raise the living standards in other countries rather than lower our living standards, and yet it would appear that the globalists, many of the people you oppose, really are interested in lowering living standards here.
Yes, thank goodness, though, you're bringing this to all of our attention, so we will change it.
We are living in indeed exciting times, and for those of you out in the listening audience who have not yet read either Confessions of an Economic Hitman, which we do carry, or certainly The Secret History of the American Empire, which we do carry, or heard our interviews with John Perkins, they are available from Radio Liberty, and we'll tell you more about that in just a few moments. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest this evening is John Perkins, and certainly I was fascinated by your story of your...
Gold and silver is tremendously undervalued. Global demand vastly exceeds mine supply by more than 60% annually. There is little in the financial world more certain than a coming explosion in the prices of gold and silver. The U.S. dollar continues to lose value and respect as the world's reserve currency. Our nation faces challenges on many fronts, and a day doesn't pass without another economist bringing forth warnings of impending economic calamity. There has never been a better time than right now to acquire physical gold and silver. Discount Gold and Silver Trading was founded on the principles of truth and honesty. We believe in providing a quality product, quality service, and most importantly, competitive pricing. We provide all forms of precious metals, including American gold, silver, platinum, and rare investment and circulated coins. Silver bars, rounds, and 90% silver bags are on hand for the silver investor. Gold self-directed IRAs are available. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. Toll free, that's 1-800-375-4188.
Most Americans are iodine deficient today because they stopped adding iodine to our milk and to our flour, and only about half of the salt that's consumed in the United States today contains iodine. So Radio Liberty has produced a four-tape or a four-CD set that discusses the health benefits of iodine. We also offer Iodorol. It contains 12.5 milligrams of iodine per tablet. And we also offer potassium iodide tablets, a little protects your thyroid gland in case there's a nuclear attack. So if you'd like to order these products or obtain additional information, why don't you call 1-800-544-8927. That's 1-800-544-8927. Or go to our website at RadioLiberty.com. That's RadioLiberty.com. Once again, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927.
You got headaches? Most headaches are caused by a structural weakness of blood vessels in the head, and the blood vessels are tending to balloon, causing a headache. The structural weakness is due to a deficiency. Correct the deficiency and the body will heal itself. I blended what I believed to be the missing nutrients in the right proportions, and the headaches went away. When they were gone, they stayed gone. I named it Headache Stay Gone. See HeadacheStayGone.com or call 800-327-0727 for more information or to place an order. I'll send you a bottle of Headache Stay Gone. Headache Stay Gone will cure your headaches and prevent them from coming back before you pay the bill. Headache Stay Gone has already cured the worst migraines I have ever heard of. Call 800-327-0727. All orders are shipped the same day. Call 800-327-0727. That's 800-327-0727.
Hi, this is Dr. Tony Teary. Are you one of the many people who take vitamin supplements? Do you take handfuls of pills each day to increase energy, reduce your pain, or improve your overall health? Now there is a better way to get the vitamins and minerals your body needs in a delicious-tasting whole food liquid supplement, Body Balance. Body Balance contains 121 essential vitamins and minerals and is made from only organic and natural sources. Developed by doctors, Body Balance was originally available only through healthcare professionals. Now this incredible whole food liquid supplement can be delivered directly to your home. Body Balance offers an extremely effective method to feed your body towards wellness, and we're confident you'll love the difference your body feels. To order your Body Balance, call me directly at 1-800-768-9763 and try it risk-free for 45 days. Again, that's 1-800-768-9763 or online at healthyfoundations.net.
You'll find a whole segment in the State Department webpage on disinformation on John Perkins and his book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman, because they do not want the American people to believe John Perkins. And they're suggesting that he's a charlatan, he's dishonest. And why would they have a whole segment on John Perkins? Because the last thing the State Department wants is for the American people to learn the truth, the real truth about American foreign policy, and Mr. Perkins says that was, he considered that a great compliment to him that they would take all that time to try to discredit him.
I also have, I think, discovered why they've done that. I've been on several TV shows in other countries, and one of the Greek producers of those shows, who I recently did some filming in Latin America with him, he told me that a couple of years ago when he did the first one on me after Confessions came out, he was called on the carpet by the U.S. ambassador to Greece. And he called into the ambassador's office, and the ambassador demanded to know, why were you airing this anti-American person, John Perkins? And, of course, this producer said, well, I don't consider him anti-American at all, and I think you people should be proud that you live in a country where someone can speak out this way. In any case, the ambassador went on to say that he'd been lambasted by people in Greece, calling and saying, what's the State Department's official position on John Perkins' book? And, of course, the ambassador didn't know how to respond to that. So my Greek friend surmised that had happened in other countries, too, and these ambassadors kind of pleaded with or demanded that the State Department come out with an official position on my book so that they wouldn't have to answer those questions. They can just say that whenever they get the call, we'll go to our website and see what we have to say about it.
All right, fine. Well, I'm glad that you're creating a certain sense of awareness, at least on the part of the State Department, that, you know, the word is getting out and they're going to have to do everything they can to discredit you.
But it's funny, isn't it? Because, you know, you've also got Syriana, movies like Syriana and The Constant Gardener and Hotel Rwanda and Blood Diamond, and there's a lot of other books out too. So I think the word is more and more getting out there, and I think they're beginning to get scared at the State Department finally, and I think that's a good thing.
Well, I do too, but I think, of course, the others are already fictional. They may be based upon fact, but they're fictional. Yours is not fictional. It's based upon fact, and it is fact, and it's your personal experience, which gives it so much more of a personal appeal. Syriana was a great movie, but the movie had very little to do with the book, which was written by Robert Baer, a book we carry, actually, called See No Evil, but you would read the book and watch the movie, you'd never know they were related at all.
That's certainly true.
But anyway, of course, we have a great deal of respect for Mr. Baer. His admissions as an insider in the CIA, just as your admissions as an insider in the corporatocracy. For our listeners who haven't heard you before, would you mind describing what the corporatocracy really is?
Well, yes, when I say that we have created the world's first truly global empire, it immediately brings to mind the question, well, who's the emperor? And an emperor is defined as someone who is not elected, does not serve a limited term, and reports to no one, really, answers to no one. And certainly we can't really say that any of our presidents are like that, at least not to date. But we can say that there's a group of people that answer that description, and these are the heads of our biggest corporations, and what I call the corporatocracy. This is not a conspiracy theory. These men that don't have to get together in smoke-filled rooms and plot to do something illegal, they all have that one objective of making windfall profits regardless of the environmental and social cost. And they basically control our politics, whether we have a Republican or Democrat in the White House or in Congress. They control our international politics anyway. Things nationally, like the composition of the Supreme Court, a few things like that, differ. But they pay for all of our major campaigns for our politicians, either directly or through their major stockholders, and they also pretty much control our press, either through direct ownership or funding our advertisements.
And, of course, basically we see them all throughout the world, but we see them in Iraq today, the Bechtel Corporation, Fluor Corporation, Halliburton Corporation. These are many of the same corporations that you were engaged in the corporatocracy, aren't they?
Yes, and they're making a tremendous amount of money. To them, Iraq is certainly not a failure. It's a huge financial success.
And, of course, all the suffering that goes along with that, well, they're really not concerned. After all, you don't gauge profit in suffering. It's the bottom line. We're going to be back in just a moment with Mr. Perkins. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest, of course, is John Perkins. His book, The Secret History of the American Empire, and subtitled Economic Hitmen, Shackles, and the Truth About the Global Corporation. And of course, it's a second look at this story he told in his first book, Confessions of an Economic Hitman. And of course, the second book, which he was involved in writing, was, of course, it's As Old as Empire. And we'd like to mention a little bit to our listeners what the second book was, As Old as Empire, although you didn't write it, while you were instrumental in organizing it.
Yes, it was published by Barrett Kohler, the wonderful independent publishing company that published the hardback edition of Confessions of an Economic Hitman. And the idea was to get stories from other economic hitmen and jackals, or from bona fide researchers who had conducted research on these activities. And I wrote the introduction to the book, and that's really what it is. It's these stories. A lot of them are written by researchers, academicians who've been looking into this. So the idea was to try to get the message out in a rather more academic, perhaps we could say, objective style. As you point out earlier, I write in a narrative style. I try to tell the stories, the personal stories of what's gone on, and do it in a way that's kind of fun to read, almost like a novel, although it isn't a novel. Everything I write is strictly fact. But I try to write it in that kind of style. A Game as Old as Empire was done more as an academic treatise. And then following that, we came out with The Secret History of the American Empire, which I did write, and did, again, write in the narrative style. It also includes a lot of stories from jackals and economic hitmen who came out of the shadows to tell me their stories after they had read Confessions. And in addition, it brings things right up to date up until 2007, and has a lot devoted to what we all can do, and I think must do, to turn this around to create a sustainable, stable, and peaceful world.
Well, because I think that the first and foremost thing is for people to understand what's going on in the world, and that's the big problem. We all have this idea. We need a powerful military to protect us against the wicked communists. And of course, as I point out in much of my writings, certainly there would be no wicked communist empire if it weren't for constant infusions of funding from the West. We have the best enemy money could buy, and certainly we need that enemy to justify the massive military and intelligence and federal spending that goes into funding the corporatocracy. You have to have an enemy to rally the people behind the government. And we're going to be back here in just a moment with Mr. John Perkins. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and John, do you have any sort of a web page or any place people can go to get more information on their own?
Yeah, I do. JohnPerkins.org, www.johnperkins.org. And that actually will link to a number of other web pages, including two organizations that I'm very deeply involved with, the Pachamama Alliance, Pachamama.org, P-A-C-H-A-M-A-M-A, and DreamChange.org. Those are two nonprofits that do a lot of work with indigenous people and are trying to change our dream in this country from one that emphasizes, you know, materialism and profits to one that really looks at creating a better world. But they can get to all that through johnperkins.org.
Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY. If you have a question or comment for John, because certainly he knows this subject better than any other person. And, of course, it's been a very dangerous thing to write about this. He has been threatened. They've attempted to bribe him in the past. In fact, they maintain their control over the people who've been involved, much through fear. And if you've worked with the CIA or the intelligence agencies and were to come forward and tell what John has told, why, you would not last very long. But under any circumstances, I think that John has been protected, and because I believe that it's important that his information gets out. Now, what is your take on what's going on in the Middle East today? Why don't you first of all explain to our listeners why you feel we really went into Afghanistan and then Iraq, and then what are your feelings about the possibility that we're going to get involved in a war with Iran?
Well, Dr. Stan, I think to really understand Iraq and Afghanistan. We have to go back to Saudi Arabia and the oil embargoes of the early 70s. The State Department, the Treasury Department came to me at that point and said, listen, you know, we can't allow OPEC to blackmail us anymore. You've got to come up with a plan so this won't happen again. And they brought in a few other economic hitmen, too. I wasn't alone in it, certainly. I went off to Saudi Arabia because I knew Saudi Arabia was the key. It had more oil than anywhere else, and the House of Saud, the royal family, was corrupt and corruptible. And the long story is in the books, but the short version is that we struck a deal with the House of Saud whereby they would send most of their petrodollars back to the U.S. and invest in the government, U.S. government securities. The Treasury Department would use the interest, which has amounted to trillions of dollars over the years, to hire U.S. corporations to build up Saudi Arabia, to build big petrochemical complexes, industrial complexes, and in fact entire cities out of the desert. And the Saudis agreed that they would never purchase oil with anything but U.S. dollars, and therefore OPEC had to make the same agreement, which was extremely important to us back in the 70s when after we'd gone off the gold standard. Anyway, there's a lot more detail, but after this deal, which was an incredible deal, I dare say the most important financial deal that's been made since World War II, we decided after that that Saddam Hussein ought to accept something similar in Iraq. But we couldn't get him to do so. The economic hitmen failed. And the assassins, the jackals, went in, but they couldn't take him out. His security was good, and he had too many look-alike doubles. And so in 91, we sent in the military. We destroyed his military and figured that he was sufficiently chastised that now he would come around. We didn't want to take him out because he's the kind of strong man Washington likes if he's on their side. He keeps his populations under control, keeps pumping oil, and keeps the Iranians in their borders. We figured that he'd been sufficiently chastised by the destruction of his military that now he'd come around, but he didn't. In the 90s, the economic hitmen still couldn't get through to him. The jackals couldn't take him out, so we went in again. So it was about oil. It was about constructing, you know, having the money to have huge construction projects in as we had in Saudi Arabia to do that again in Iraq. And, of course, now we've managed to destroy a great share of the country, so we've got a lot of reconstruction to do if we can ever bring enough peacefulness to the area to really make it happen. We may have shot ourselves in the foot in the process, but that was the real goal, was the oil and the construction and bringing another huge country, economically huge country, into our fold as part of the empire.
Well, how do you feel about the possibility of a war with Iran? Wouldn't this be sort of really overkill?
It would be terrible. You know, we've seen in Iraq that it's created much more terrorism and in a situation where it's going to be very, very difficult to get out and not leave the whole Middle East extremely vulnerable to the terrorists. We've enhanced terrorism, there's no question. And yet, of course, again, from the corporatocracy standpoint, they've made a lot of money. Shipping arms and the whole war effort makes fortunes for people as well as oil. If we go into Iran, I think it'll be just disastrous, and I would suggest right now that if we start to do that, that everybody who listens to your programs, and you have an amazing number of listeners, takes to the streets. I mean, don't let this happen. We can't let this happen because, first of all, it's not warranted under the circumstances, and second of all, it's totally ineffective, and third, not only is it ineffective, it then plays right into the hands of true terrorism and creates a much more unstable and dangerous world.
And I said to concur with you. In fact, I'm really terrified at the thought that anybody would possibly contemplate that. And yet, I read just today, Mr. Woolsey, former head of the CIA, had recently, within the last few days, and said, "Well, we just may have to bomb Iran." And I'm wondering, what do these people really think? I question their ability to design programs, because I think that you never know how a war is going to end up when you get it started.
Now, the only thing that you do know is that the corporatocracy will get richer, in the short run at least. In the long run, it may be totally disastrous for everyone, but, you know, tremendous profits come out of these wars. And it isn't just all the munitions that we sell and the construction, the Quonset huts and the air bases and, you know, all of that. There's a lot of money there, there's no question. But beyond all that, and you think about all the spin-offs that come from war, you know, all the other industries that supply those industries, and all the lawyers that get involved, and the insurance companies, and the refinancing companies, and the finance companies. I mean, it's just the spin-offs from something like Iraq and Vietnam, too, which probably most Americans look at as a failure. The corporatocracy looks at it as a success because they made fortunes there.
And I fear that's really true. Well, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. If you have a question for Mr. Perkins, that's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, in your latest book, The Secret History of the American Empire, you have a whole section on assassinations. Now, certainly the American people don't like to think that we send a professional hitman out to actually kill people. But, of course, this is the way that the game of international politics is actually carried out. Would you like to sort of delve into that a little bit?
It's a sad act of our policy, but and actually, I mean, it's pretty much on the record. You know, there's no question that we were deeply involved in the overthrow and death of Salvador Allende of Chile, and of the overthrow of Arbenz of Guatemala, Mossadegh in Iran, a democratic president in Iran, who I've often thought if we'd encouraged him back in the 50s rather than throwing him out, how different the Middle East might be today. Diem in Vietnam, Lumumba in the Congo, Roldos in Ecuador was assassinated, Torrijos, on and on. And these, most of these are pretty much on the record now. We you know, history has told us that the files have been released. And it's a shameful, disgraceful part of our history and of our modern history. And you're right that most Americans don't realize this is going on. It is going on, and it's always a threat. Right now, these seven democratically elected presidents of South America who are saying, you know, we want to keep our resources for our people. We're not going to let the World Bank and IMF and U.S. corporations exploit us anymore. They're all facing this kind of thing. Someone walks into their office who has a job like mine and says to each one of these presidents, you know, now that you're president, I can help you and your family become very rich, or I can see to it you follow in the footsteps of Allende and Arbenz and the others. That, in other words, that you're thrown out in a coup or assassinated. And the fact that this has happened in the past means that these presidents have to take this very, very seriously. And there's very little that they can do to protect themselves. And to think that we are that kind of a bullying nation is repugnant to most Americans. It's one of the reasons I think it's so important that you keep talking about these things, Dr. Stan, and writing about them and talking about them on the air, and I write about them, and whenever you have me on your show, I talk about them on the air, too, because we must understand this. Awareness and being conscious is the first step, and then we must insist that we no longer do these things, that we honor democratically elected presidents, even when they threaten to nationalize our corporations. After all, we wouldn't be very happy if Chinese or Venezuelan or Ecuadorian corporations took over all of our oil companies in this country, or our utility companies, or our prisons, and privatized them. We wouldn't stand for that. So why should we expect others to stand for it when that's what we do?
Well, I think, you know, it's so foreign to the thinking of the average American, who I think is a good person, but incredibly naive about what's going on. And I know when I first heard conversations like this, and, of course, my first impression was, oh, those rotten communists, oh, they're just out there to discredit anything good about America. But, you know, after a while, it took me about 45 years to get smart enough to realize that just because the communist might say something doesn't necessarily mean that it isn't true. And I think what we have to do is try to find the truth, and then we've got to stand up for what's right, whether or not it offends other people or not, and whether or not it points a finger towards some of the corrupt people working within our own government. So, Sydney, I hope you're going to keep talking. I'll keep talking as long as God gives me the breath. And right now, let's go to Maggie, who's calling us from Texas. Hi, Maggie. How you doing?
Hi, Dr. Stan and Mr. Perkins. It's a little hard to articulate my question, but I've spent a lot of time thinking about these South American heads of state who seem to be creating their own system down there, and in particular their willingness to stand up to the international banking and the American empire is commendable. But I'm wondering if you or the guest believes that they will have the strength to really maintain their virtue and continue to think of their people as opposed to gradually accumulating more and more power and transforming into the same kind of beast that everything else seems to transform into eventually. I'm thinking of the Orwell story, not 1984, but Animal Farm, you know. And Chavez in particular, although he seems quite admirable, you get these little signs that he may be consolidating power and getting a little bit carried away.
All right. What are your thoughts on that,
John? Well, Maggie, thank you. You know, I spent a lot of time in Latin America ever since the late 60s, but in the last 6 months I've spent a lot of time there. I was with Evo Morales in the presidential palace in La Paz, Bolivia on New Year's Eve. And then I've been in Ecuador with Correa, the president there, and his government, and with Ortega in Nicaragua, and I've been around a lot in the last 6 months, talking to both these new presidents and their opposition. And I'll have to say that I don't find any sign that any of these presidents is trying to be a dictator. And now nobody can read their minds. Who knows where they're headed? But I can't see that. They're all democratically elected. They seem very sincere. Chavez also, who is very vitriolic, and I wish sometimes he'd tone down his language. He can really, you know, tick me off with his language. But and there's this rumor, you know, that he's trying to become a second Simón Bolívar. But I haven't seen anything to indicate that there's any truth to that. Again, I can't read his mind. But I think the greater danger is that these presidents will find themselves succumbing more and more to us, to the economic hitmen, to the threat. To the bribes, the promise of bribes, legal bribes, making their families rich through contracts, etc., and the threats that they'll be thrown out. And I've seen a number of them already begin to waver, I think, because of that. I think that truly is the greater danger than that they will become dictators.
But doesn't that amount to more or less the same thing?
Well... It, except from the standpoint that what I'm saying is that I think these men are all, from what I can see, well-intended, and that it's our country corrupting them that could be the big problem, which means it's your responsibility and mine and Dr. Stan's and all of the listeners out there to make sure this doesn't happen, not to allow our country to corrupt them, not to allow the economic hitmen and the corporatocracy to corrupt them, but to insist that we allow them to move on their own course. Rafael Correa, the new president of Ecuador, when I was down there, said, you know, I don't want any of your foreign aid. We're not looking for foreign aid for the United States. We're just looking for you to kind of get out of the way. We've got tremendous resources in this country. We've got lots of oil. We've got Amazon rainforest. We've got tremendous resources. Just allow us to use our resources to pull our own people up by their bootstraps. And the problem is that we don't allow them to do that, and we have a huge military base in Ecuador that's always a threat there to any president. And so I think, you know, my concern that they will succumb is one that you and I have a lot of control over.
And I think, Meg, we're just going to have to wait and see what happens, but let's hope that they have the integrity to do what's right, and let's hope that the people who control our intelligence agencies do not resort again to assassination to destroy anyone who is a true patriot of their own country and concerned about the welfare of their people.
Yes, thank you very much.
Well, thank you so much, Maggie. And let's go to Jack, who's calling. Jack, do you have a quick question?
Yeah. It's been reported that the CIA sponsored Islamofascism, sponsored the Taliban, the textbooks that are used in the madrasas. And I'm wondering whom your guest would identify as the primary monetary supporters, sponsors of the CIA.
All right, well, let's just go ahead and certainly Jack is suggesting that there have been some reports that the CIA is actually was interested in creating an enemy in the form of the Taliban and this radical form of Islam, and had actually financed some of the textbooks that are used in the madrasa schools. And do you think that they would be so crass as to actually begin to encourage this radical form of Islam to justify a war with the Islamic world?
Well, you know, I like Dr. Stan to speak from personal experience and not to speculate on things I don't have personal experience in, and I don't have any personal experience in that, so I hate to speculate about it, but I will say that my experience as an economic hitman was that almost nothing is beyond the possibility when you're looking at the CIA, and we certainly know that the CIA supported Osama bin Laden when he was fighting the Russians in Afghanistan. So anything's possible, but I can't speak from any personal experience about that.
All right, fine. Thank you so much, Jack. Well, we've got just 3 minutes for you to wrap up the program, and then we'll have to let you go. But what are your thoughts, John? What's the message you'd like to leave with our listeners this evening?
I think we all have to get out there and every day do something to make this a better world, make it a sustainable, stable, and peaceful world. And there's a long list of things in the secret history of the American Empire, and including organizations, a whole appendix of organizations that people could support or join that would work to this end. But each one of us has our own individual passions and talents. We can all take a different path, but let's all head down toward the same destination, which is to create a sustainable, stable, and peaceful world for all of us and every child born on this planet, knowing that it's a very small world we live in, and that none of our children are going to inherit a stable, sustainable, and peaceful world unless every child on this planet has that opportunity. And I really think that we have the opportunity to make that happen now in our lifetimes. I'm going to devote the rest of my life to it, and I would invite every listener to put at least a part of their lives toward that end. It's a very gratifying thing to work toward.
Well, I certainly admire you and respect you for what you've done and the risks you've taken in bringing the information out and for our listeners out there. It is so vitally important that we look at the rest of the world. Over half of the world lives on less than $2 a day. In many of the countries throughout the world, there is no adequate medical care, there's no adequate water, there's no adequate sanitation. The very essentials, the things that we enjoy here, are just unknown to these people. And when, of course, they try to develop them, they seem to be blocked at every turn. And if they sell off their natural resources, why American corporations come in and may build the facilities, but they don't benefit the average individual. This will continue as long as the good people of America do nothing. And, of course, it's our recurrent theme that men and women become accomplices to the evils they fail to oppose. So I hope all of our listeners out there will certainly determine and decide tonight that they're going to join Mr. John Perkins in his effort to expose what's going on, and with the hope that those people, half the people in the world who are today living in abject poverty because of America's foreign policy, not despite it, but because of America's foreign policy, will become involved in this truly epic struggle for the survival of humankind. John, thank you very much. And will there be another sequel to the book?
There will be some more books coming out before too long, Dr. Stan.
All right, well, then we'll look forward to talking to you at that time.
Thanks very much, and keep up your great work. You're doing so much to make to bring democracy alive again. Thank you so much.
Good night. God bless you.
Good night.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and I hope you enjoyed my conversation with John Perkins, a man I've never met, but I feel that I know, and we're on a first-name basis with him, having talked to him so many times about his books, and there are three of them out there, and two of them we carry, Confessions of Economic Hitman, and then, of course, The Secret History of the American Empire. We have a four-tape set of interviews with John Perkins entitled The Economic Hitman, and so this, if you'd like to get the four-tape set and or one of the books, if you'd like more information, our telephone number is 1-800-544-8927, 1-800-544-8927, as so often happens when we have a very important program coming up. Why, we had all sorts of difficulty with our hookups this evening, probably just coincidence. I'm sure that they wouldn't actually interfere with our electronic transmission to our network of stations, or would they? Well, we live in a strange world, a world, of course, of intrigue, a world of murder and violence, and of course, Americans are dying overseas today in a war we never intended to win, any more than we ever really intended to win the war in Vietnam. And it's impossible to conceive of the fact that the mightiest nation in the world would fight a 10-year war against a little country the size of the state of Mississippi, and that would be North Vietnam, and lose that war unintentionally. And I believe it was intentional. We hope you'll want to get our 4-tape set on Vietnam, but we put together some fascinating information. We call it the Communist Capitalist Alliance. It's basically a compilation of four of my newsletters. The Communist Capitalist Alliance are the four newsletters. You can go up on the internet and read them. March, April, May, and June newsletters. And of course, you can get them from us in a little pamphlet form. Very, very well done. And very important, something you can get in other people's hands, hopefully to get them thinking. Because nothing, ladies and gentlemen, nothing is as it appears to be. So we do hope, of course, that you'll go to our website at RadioLiberty.com if you'd like to get the Capitalist-Communist Alliance compilation of four of our newsletters. Of course, you can call us at 1-800-544-8927. You really need to watch my video, DVD, or read the book Brotherhood of Darkness to understand the spiritual forces behind what's going on. My latest talk on the Forbidden Secret. That's a DVD. It comes with a syllabus, the 4-tape or 4-CD set. The Secret Behind the Secret, a 4-CD or 4-tape set on the Military Commissions Act. We think that's ever so important. We certainly have a 4-tape set on the supernatural. And it includes interviews with Johanna Michelson, who had written the book The Beautiful Side of Evil, because Johanna was a medium. And you need to understand that there really is another dimension. There's a 3-pamphlet set called The Occult Hierarchy, a compilation of a series of our newsletters over a number of years, partly my writing and partly Dr. Dennis Cuddy, but it'll introduce you to the spiritual hierarchy that rules the world. And believe me, some of these people are not animal, and they're not human. What are they then? Well, you'll be fascinated as you look into the spiritual hierarchy, because you'll not read what I think, but what the other side thinks. They write it out. They have websites. They certainly publish books. Many of them are channeled to individual prominent people by demonic spirits. And certainly one of those demonic spirits had told Barbara Mark Hubbard, one of the richest women in the world, what the future would hold. And of course, that's laid out in a book called The Revelation, the Book of Co-Creation. And we tell you what was in the original manuscript, not the one that was doctored and eventually published, but we have the pages from the original manuscript where they talk about the necessity to kill a quarter of the world's population. And as Barbara Mark Hubbard writes, that's not your job, my dear. That is ours. Well, this is Dr. Stan here at Radio Liberty, coming to you from the hills overlooking beautiful and picturesque Monterey Bay and bringing you the news behind the news, the story behind the story, hoping to convince you that reality is usually scoffed at, illusion is usually king. But in the battle for survival of Western civilization, it's going to be reality, not illusion or delusion, that's going to determine what the future will bring. And I have to remind you the views that are expressed here are not necessarily those of the owners, management, staff, sponsors, or supporters of the station you're listening to. They happen to be my views and simply the views of our guests. And for this hour, our guest is Arthur Bernclaw of Veterans for Constitutional Law. And Arthur, thank you very much for being with us this evening.
Oh, it's always a pleasure to be with you and do a program.
Well, now, of course, we've got so many veterans coming home from the war in the Middle East today, from Afghanistan and from Iraq. And so many of them, if they do come home and they're ostensibly they're intact physically, many of them have serious emotional problems. But apparently within about 3 months of getting home, almost a third of these young men, these brave young men, have gone overseas to fight for freedom and to fight for America, have come down ill. And, of course, they go to the Veterans Administration with their illness and they ask for help. And what's happening to them? Is the Veterans Administration equipped to take this just onslaught of literally hundreds of thousands of young men?
No, absolutely not. But we've got some very encouraging news tonight. We did our last program together on June 21st, and we mentioned several things. The law that allows us now to have our own attorneys, and that took effect on June 22nd. And despite the disabled American veterans and the other service organizations trying to stop this law from becoming law, it took effect on June 22nd, and that was the precursor to a big class action lawsuit just filed in San Francisco on July 23rd by Morrison and Foster, and they are the largest law firm in the country. They filed against the Veterans Administration, against the Mr. Gonzalez, the Attorney General, against Mr. Nicholson, the head of the Veterans Administration, against Admiral Cooper, the head of Veterans Benefits, against quite a few heads of the regional VA offices, and finally they filed against the man who's in charge of the health care for the VA, Dr. Michael Cussman. And for those people out there in your area, they're particularly going after Pritzke Navarra, the Veterans Service Center manager of the VA Oakland Regional Office, as well as many, many other regional office managers. And it's a class action, and it challenges the government's mistreatment of returning veterans from the war in Afghanistan and the war in Iraq. And it's a the first of its kind. It's a veterans civil rights case. It's the first of its kind, and it includes many, many officials from the Department of Veterans Affairs, and they are finally going after Mr. Gonzalez as a defendant. He is a co-defendant together with the VA, and it does focus on veterans from Iraq and Afghanistan, alleging unconscionable delays and other violations of veterans' constitutional and civil rights.
My understanding, Mr. Nicholson had actually resigned before this account.
Yeah, he resigned because he saw this lawsuit coming and he said it's too late to duck. And when he resigned, he was attempting to duck.
All right, fine. Well, I think that we have to understand that they've abandoned a lot of these veterans. And this is a great tragedy. It has been a constant pattern of mistreatment of our veterans through the years, and fortunately we have Arthur Bernclaw out there and a small band of people who are working to help our veterans and to get the truth out across America. And we're going to be back in just a moment with Arthur Bernclaw from Veterans for Constitutional Law. Well, Arthur, are they going to be able to actually bring a suit against these government employees? I thought that government
it's already in.
It really is, huh?
Yeah, it's already in, and we expect at least 800,000 veterans to be involved.
These would be primarily the veterans from the Second Gulf War, the current one?
It was geared with them spearheading it, but Vietnam veterans are applying, veterans from the Korean War, veterans from World War II. There's veterans of all kinds applying here. It was specifically geared originally for PTSD, for people from the war in Iraq and the war in Afghanistan, but anyone who has a good case is not going to be excluded.
All right, fine. Well, now, as far as what's going on at the present time, the lawsuit can drag on for a long period of time. What are they doing for these young men who are coming back now? Who are
very
ill,
little.
And what? How? In what way are they ill? We know that about a third of them are ill within 3 months, but what sort of illness do they have? Is it like the Gulf War illness? Is it some other illness? Is it really post-traumatic stress?
There's a lot of post-traumatic stress. We're estimating at pretty close to a third of the veterans. You were pretty close with that third figure that you came. We're estimating that it's very close to a third of the veterans coming back with PTSD and head injuries due to these roadside bombs. And by the way, we did a program where we mentioned that there were 22,500 veterans discharged out of the service, rushed out within 2 to 3 days on something called a personality disorder. This is part of the lawsuit. It's being investigated. We expect the reversal of most of these 22,500, and they will be getting normal discharges instead of their personality discharges, which denies them all benefits.
And, of course, the whole idea is if you had a pre-existing personality defect, then you're not entitled to any compensation. And a lot of these people, of course, were seriously ill.
And
they just didn't want to pay them any benefits.
Sure, that's
how the game is played, you know. We win, you lose. You're just a poor common grunt, and we don't care about you. We've exploited you, we've used you up, and now we've got a means of getting around this. We're going to call you a personality defect, and therefore, any symptoms you have, any problems you have, that's your problem, Buster. And, of course, this is cruel and inhumane because many of these were normal, healthy kids.
Of course, and I'll tell you, the VA was as slick as could be. They've been as slick as could be for years and years.
Hold that thought right there. We're going to be back in just a moment. Well, this is Dr. Stan. I guess this is Arthur Burntown. We're talking about the mistreatment of our veterans as they come back from fighting overseas. And of course, many of them have been labeled as personality defects. And of course, if you have a personality defect, they can simply discharge from the military, and you may be so ill you can't work. You may have a real illness like Gulf War illness. You may have post-traumatic stress. But once they can label you as a personality disorder, pre-existing, and how many people have they done that to?
Oh, hundreds of thousands of people they have done this to. Hundreds of thousands going back in history. In fact, the chief litigant, the chief lawyer for Morrison and Foster, is Mr. Gordon Erspammer, and Mr. Erspammer is the same attorney who is in charge of the lawsuit. I don't know if you recall the NARA suit, National Association of Radiation Survivors from World War II.
No, I really don't.
Okay, that's when the San Francisco office of the VA destroyed all those records and all those files, and I had to send two trailer trucks to confiscate all the records of veterans of World War II out of the San Francisco office, and they put a special master in charge so the VA could not destroy any more records, and the VA took it on the chin on that one. Mr. Erspammer won that case. And they brought him back here now to head up this case as the head litigant. And Mr. Erspammer was personally affected by the NARS trial because his father was got radiation in Bikini Atoll, and he finally won that case. But even afterwards, by the way, that was the first case that he won, that was the Veterans Court of Appeals. That was the first decision of the Veterans Court of Appeals, and it took them 10 years to pay his mother the money. It took the VA 10 years to pay his mother the money. It's incredible.
Well, of course, they just drag it on and drag it on. Hopefully she'll die.
Well, you know, that's the agenda. The agenda is either the veteran dies or he gives up out of frustration, and that's how the VA wins most of the time.
In fact, I know a friend of mine, Jesse Tretido, won a case for $1 million from the FBI for perjury and cover-up of the pain and suffering associated with the murder of his brother. And it's a very famous case in the Salt Lake City area. And they've just said, we're not going to pay him. And it doesn't matter what the judge said. Didn't matter what the court said. I mean, the FBI is above the law. And I don't think in a free society, any branch of government or any group of men should be above the law. They think they are, and we're just going to have to see now whether or not they can get a real cash settlement, for these veterans who've been so badly treated by our politicians who really care so much for the veterans.
I think this lawsuit is going to turn things around because these attorneys at Morrison and Foster, this is an unprecedented national class action lawsuit that alleges shameful failures by the U.S. Department of Veterans Affairs and other government institutions like the Justice Department to caring for injured veterans, particularly. It's particularly those who have returned from Iraq and Afghanistan. It's zeroing in on them, but it's not eliminating others. And the firm is handling the case on a pro bono basis, and they're accepting any cases that come in. They're asking people to send their cases in, and they're reading these cases, and they're reading charges. And I have filed against Mr. Principi, a former secretary, who has his own company, QTC, that he's slipped them $1.2 billion worth of medical evaluations from disabled veterans and returning troops. And they charge the government for each one of these evaluations $495, whereas if it's done in the hospital by a VA doctor, the charge is $89.80 to the government. And I have been asking them to indict Mr. Principi, and Mr. Gonzalez said, quote unquote, we can't touch Principi, he's too high up on the food chain. Now, let's see if Morrison and Foster think that they can't touch Principi.
Well, now, why would Gonzalez be involved after he's the Attorney General? Where is the Attorney General? I would think this would go through the Defense Department.
Oh, no. He's in... Gonzalez has been in cahoots with them since he's taken office.
Well,
he's been strictly in cahoots with the VA. It's the Attorney General's office, the Justice Department. Whenever anybody sues the VA, it's the Justice Department that has to defend them, because the VA lawyers, as many as they are inept, and they can't handle the case. They always have to turn it over to the Justice Department, and sometimes the Justice Department can't cope, and they call in, who is the head? Not the Inspector General, but they call in somebody else that is like above the Justice Department. The Solicitor General gets called in. When the Justice Department can't cope with it, the Solicitor General takes the case over.
All right, fine. Well, let's hope, though, that in the meantime, that you're going to be able to get care for these veterans, because this, of course, court case could go on for a long period of time.
This is a problem, Dr. Stan, because they keep turning down the request for PTSD counselors. They're claiming they don't have the money, but they sure got enough money for Halliburton and the oil companies, and they keep turning them down for PTSD counselors. And that's why it's become so serious. Initially, with Mr. Nicholson, and he's been there now for 2.5 years, Mr. Nicholson was saying, no, we don't have to have any more money coming into the budget. We got enough. But now they see they don't have enough. There was a practically a billion-dollar shortfall with the VA, and medical care was put in jeopardy. Medical care in general for all veterans was put in general, but this didn't seem to bother the VA, as they they gave out all those millions of dollars on incentive bonuses that they paid recently.
Yeah, I think for our listeners, you should explain what these incentive bonuses are, because it's money given not to the veterans.
Right.
It's given to the employees of the VA, not for providing care, but for withholding care. And the more money you can keep from the veterans, the richer you get.
And, you know, with almost $1 billion shortfall, they still gave out these incentive bonuses to these people in the VA. And the shameful part about it is most of these people sat on the same boards who decided their own incentive bonuses. They actually gave themselves incentive bonuses for denying claims.
That gives incest a bad name. Well, because I think it's so important that the American people understand the treatment of the veterans when they get home here. Now, how about the care for the people who are in the military? My understanding is that the military medical facilities are pretty well overwhelmed by the tremendous number of casualties they're having, and then certainly taking care of them, the brain injuries, the amputees. There are just so many they never anticipated this many casualties after this war. What's happening? We had reports about three months ago, about, of course, what was happening at Walter Reed Hospital, and the rats and the plaster falling off the walls. And are these things being taken care of, or are they going to try to sweep it under the rug? And what about the care for the people in the actual Army facilities? Is it still pretty good?
In the Army facilities, it's good to an extent. The thing that they're most concentrating on now is when somebody comes back injured, the aim is to get them out of the military without paying either no benefits or as little as possible. That's the number one aim of the military, that it doesn't even get over to the VA, that the military shifts them out without a medical evaluation.
Well, now, if you are regular Army, aren't they required to take care of you medically then? And
oh, you bet they are, but there is no such thing as they're required to. They do what they please because nobody has done anything about it until now. We're holding a lot of hope with this lawsuit to do something and make major changes.
Well, now, what about if you're in the National Guard or you're in the reserve unit that's activated? Do you get the consideration for treatment there, or are you simply pretty much on your own?
You're pretty much on your own, and if you remember, they did not use the National Guard very much in Vietnam because they found out in Korea it was a disaster to send these people out into combat not being prepared. But they're sending them right now even more than they did in Korea. They're sending them out now, and they are not well-trained enough to cope with these combat conditions. Not at all.
And, of course, because they come back and they're actually sending them back for a second or third rotation.
They send them right back into the meat grinder, Dr. Smith.
And, of course, these young men have signed up to serve at home here to protect the nation, not to go off and fight for George Bush's wars overseas. And, of course, this is really a massive military campaign that is being used as a great diversion to justify, of course, expanding government control over the lives of the American people and for bankrupting our nation and for destroying the value of our currency. And so these men are simply pawns in a game. And yet, of course, they didn't sign up for it, and yet there's no way out. Many of them, are they going ahead, most of them serving there, even though that they didn't sign up for it, even though many of their terms have expired and they're being kept in involuntarily, a forced draft?
Exactly. They're being kept in. The draft is not effective yet. They haven't voted on a draft. I do believe they are going to pass the draft. In fact, I predicted the draft would be passed by May or June of this year, and it wasn't.
Well, of course, maybe it's going to take that to get the American people to realize that, we're all involved in what's going on.
Well, I think once they pass the draft, I think this VA thing is all over with. I think it's going to put an end to everything.
In what way do you say that?
The way I say it is the mothers and fathers of this country are going to finally stand up on their on their hind legs and say, hey, you're not taking my children.
Oh, well, let's hold that thought. Well, this is Dr. Stan here. Our guest is, of course, Arthur Bernclough. We're talking about what's happening to the veterans. And, of course, we have a regular army. If you're in the regular army, why, of course, you've volunteered. You are expected to be looked after the rest of your life as long as you're in the army. And even if you're discharged, they're still responsible for you through military facilities, at least theoretically. But
well, those are the promises made, but they're not being kept. You know, we all, when we went into the service, we all swore an oath, and we kept it. The government didn't. And Morrison and Foster is estimating the class size. The minimum that they expected was 320,000 veterans, but they've gone up to over 800,000, and they're getting that figure by multiplying the number of military personnel serving in Iraq and Afghanistan. Believe it or not, it's up to 1.6 million have served ever since all this thing started with Afghanistan and Iraq. By the estimated percentage of PTSD amongst the returning troops, they were estimating 20%. It's now somewhere between 20 to 50%, but I think it's going to settle in at around the one-third figure, 33. The nonprofit, I'll tell you the veterans organizations that are part of this. Veterans for Common Sense and Veterans United for Truth are two of the plaintiffs together here for that. And there's another group here called Swords to Plowshares. Michael Blicker is the executive director there. And the conspicuous absence should be noted right here. The American Legion did not file suit. The DAV did not file suit. The VFW, Vietnam Veterans of America, Paralyzed War Veterans, AMVETS, all the chartered organizations, not one has filed suit. In the meantime, we're sending information, reams and reams of information, to Morrison and Foster and to Gordon Erspammer to get this guy Principe indicted, get this guy Principe, put him where he belongs. And, you know, Mr. Gonzalez had the nerve to say to me, he says, what do you got against Principe? He's a nice guy. And I said, I have nothing personal against him. The only thing I want out of this for my trivia collection, I would like a license plate made by Mr. Principe and Stir. That's all I want out of it.
I think for our listeners, Mr. Principe had worked for the Veterans Administration. He left the Veterans Administration. And for some reason, he's got something on somebody, because he's made over $1 billion since he left the Veterans Administration from contracts with the Veterans Administration for doing these examinations to determine whether the veterans are disabled. Now, how you can certainly leave an organization, get a contract with the organization, charge five times or more what it would cost to have it done by the Veterans Administration, and then, of course, now to have somebody suggest there might be some hanky-panky going on. And didn't Mr. Gonzalez say we can't go after Mr. Principe?
Yeah, because he's too high up on the food chain.
That's his
exact words.
He must have something on somebody.
Okay. Mr. Principe was forced to resign because of the depleted uranium scandal. It became known when the scientific facts were in. It became known that Mr. Principe had hidden it between 4 to 5 years, what was really going on with
the depleted. Hold that thought right there. Well, this is Dr. Stan. Arthur's telling us about a Mr. Principe who worked for the Veterans Administration, who actively concealed the truth about the toxic side effects of depleted uranium. Once it's inhaled, of course, in dust form, and we've contaminated a large part of a million point three veterans who have been fighting in Afghanistan and Iraq here in the last 3 to 5 years. So Mr. Principe concealed the information about depleted uranium and the toxic effects of it. Now, what was the reports he was concealing? Was it reports put out by the military, scientific reports, or what
sort of reports put out by their own investigative committees in the military? Colonel Doug Roque put out these reports, and Doug Roque is very sick now from the depleted uranium. And he's lost quite a few people from his group who have already died from cancer and leukemia.
They were people under his command working with the depleted uranium, right? And we've talked to Doug Roque. And for any of our listeners who'd like to see an interview with Roque, it's in a DVD we carry called Beyond Treason. And with that comes a CD-ROM that contains literally thousands of pages of suppressed government information. These are official government documents. They know how toxic the depleted uranium is. That's why we're using it. We're destroying the lives of these courageous young men.
Initially in Gulf War I, most of the problems were caused by chemical reactions, by biological and chemical. And Joyce Riley was right on target with the her summation of what caused most of the problems.
And that was really when, of course, the General Schwarzenegger ordered the blowing up, of course, of
the Kamachia
and several other areas, and contaminated our troops with sarin gas and with biological warfare agents. And they knew it was going to happen. I mean, after all, you have these massive bunkers all over that part of the country filled with canisters of both chemical and biological weapons, and you ought to know that when you actually blow up those facilities, you're going to disperse the weapons, which is exactly what they would do. Why would we contaminate our troops when Saddam Hussein would not? And over 150,000 American troops were exposed to sarin gas, and it has a delayed neurological effect. You may not get any neurological effect immediately, but years down the line, you get progressive neurological changes and degeneration. And
their
boys are getting that today.
There was also a lot of depleted uranium buried underneath the sand from the war that went on. Now, in Gulf War II, the depleted uranium became a bigger problem because we were using depleted uranium even more in Gulf War II than we were in Gulf War I. And it took time for the cancers and leukemia to start developing, and now that has become the biggest problem. Not the chemical, which is still a big problem, but the depleted uranium, and we don't know how many thousands and thousands of people are going to be affected as the years go by with cancer and leukemia, all due to this depleted uranium. The whole country of Iraq is virtually a toxic wasteland, and it's dangerous to remain in that country. even for the Iraqis, it's dangerous. It's and the birth defects are phenomenal, what's going on there.
Well, I think it's important for people to understand that there really are people out there who believe there are too many people in the world, and you're going to have to die of something. You might as well die of cancer. At the beginning of the 20th century, that's about a little over 100 years ago, one in every three people in America contracted cancer. Now, every other person, 50% of our population, contracts cancer, and nobody ever asks why. Well, they'll admit maybe it was smoking. Smoking's bad for you, but why didn't they do anything about that long ago? And, of course, now we've added the depleted uranium. Are there really people would want to kill off large segments of our population, including our military, and would send them off to overseas, not to fight for freedom, but so they would contract diseases that would lead to cancer and an early death? I would simply point out that we have the Veterans Administration figures on what happened to the veterans of the first Gulf War, if anybody would like to see them. From the Veterans Administration, where almost 80,000 of the veterans are dead. Almost 80,000 of the 695,000 of people we sent are dead.
How would
that have happened? Well,
if it
happened, why doesn't Rush Limbaugh tell us? If you'd like to get the reports, our number 1-800-544-8927. If you care about humanity, if you care about our veterans, find out what's really going on. And, of course, we hope you want to help Arthur as well. He's doing a great job.
The plaintiff class here.
Well, this is Dr. Stan. Our guest is Arthur Bernclough of Veterans for Constitutional Law. Go ahead, Arthur.
Okay, the plaintiff class seeks declaratory and injunctive relief only right now. They're not seeking monetary damages right now, but they will. And they challenge the constitutionality of the Veterans Judicial Review Act of 1988 and related administrative policies and procedures. And the plaintiffs allege a number of policy failures on the part of the VA, including, now before we go into what it includes here, the Veterans Judicial Review Act of 1988 created that phony veterans court that has had only 194 veteran wins out of over 18,000 cases. So the whole thing is being challenged as a farce, the Veterans Judicial Review Act of 1988. And that includes repeated violations of federal statutes guaranteeing health care for returning veterans. They're going to make the Veterans Administration that guarantees the health care keep these promises. This is part of a lawsuit. Unconscionable delays and prohibitively complicated procedures in the adjudication of claims seeking benefits or medical care and appeals, coupled with the VA's providing misleading timeliness statistics to the American public, like every other word they say is a lie when they make a statement. You can't believe their statistics because they're almost always wrong. The VA's premature and intentional denial of claims and other administrative abuses calculated to boost incentive bonuses for VA employees, that's the question of incentive bonuses again, exertion by VA officials in Washington, D.C., of inappropriate pressure and influence upon the adjudication of PTSD claims by regional VA offices, and a pattern of chronic underfunding and understaffing of VA programs, like the PTSD program with the counselors, and the head injury program where they never have enough money to take care of things that they should. Now, according to Gordon Erspammer, the chief litigation partner in Morrison & Foerster, he says this isn't a case about isolated problems or the type of normal delays and administrative hassles we all occasionally experience with bureaucracies. The case is founded on the virtual meltdown of the VA's capacity to care for men and women who serve their country bravely and honorably, and were severely injured and are now being treated like second-class citizens. The delays caused by the VA...
Hold that thought there, right? Arthur will be back in just a moment here at Radio Liberty. Well, this is Dr. Stan, and Arthur is simply telling us what this lawsuit is going to entail, and this is being brought by a very large and successful law firm against the Veterans Administration for the intentional refusal to take care of the veterans of certainly not only the current war, but the previous wars as well, and making mockery out of the whole appeals process and of the veterans' courts, where supposedly the veterans are going to, you know, get a fair shake, and, you know, they get maybe 100 cases. What were the figures? How many of the cases were settled out of how many cases?
The figures were only 194 veteran cases won in the Veterans Court since that court was created in 1988. That's out of over 18,000 claims that were put in through them.
And so that sort of suspected that maybe this was a kangaroo court.
Of course, 1%. Right. 1%.
And that's really how they treat the veterans. But we can't let the men who are going overseas to fight for freedom realize, of course, that they are simply expendable. Go right ahead.
The delays that were caused by the VA have created impenetrable barriers to relief for thousands of impaired veterans whose suffering is compounded by a VA system that denies them their fundamental constitutional and civil rights that all the rest of us share. Now, Mr. Erspammer is acutely aware of the plight of veterans with serious health problems because of having to endure these waits for treatment and benefits of the government, and his own father was exposed to it, which I mentioned before. And even with a son's help, his mother took his mother more than 10 years to obtain disability and death benefits from the VA, a journey that included the first case ever heard or decided by the newly created Farce Court of Veterans Appeals. I call it the Farce Court. It's now called the Court of Appeals for Veterans Claims. And that case in 1990 was called Erspammer versus Derwinski, who was the head of the VA at that time. And it was the National Association of Radiation Survivors. It was a landmark due process case. And it addressed many of the same types of abuses of the, as the filing that was done on July 23rd. Now, Paul Sullivan is the executive director of Veterans for Common Sense. He explained his organization's participation in the class action. And he said, since the Iraq and Afghanistan wars began, the VA has betrayed our veterans. Instead of hiring more doctors and claims processes, VA instituted new policies that block veterans' access to prompt mental health care. America should be outraged. While we're reluctant to file suit against the VA, it is the VA's anti-veteran policies that leave us no other option than to fight for what our veterans earned after fighting on the front lines in Iraq, Afghanistan, and previous wars before that. Now, I'm going to give out some telephone numbers and some websites for people who have cases that they want to have heard, and you can contact these people directly. And don't forget, there's like around 800,000 veterans in there, so don't expect to get an immediate return on what you write them or what you send them on the computer. These people, there's at least 800,000 veterans that are in this. And Bob Handy, who is the chair of a plaintiff group, Veterans United for Truth, he emphasized the nonpartisan nature of the suit, stating, "We believe that this is a case that all points of the political spectrum will support, as regardless of one's views on the current wars, we all share the strong belief that we should take care of those who die or who are wounded in battle." And the plaintiffs assert that the existing VA system for obtaining benefits of medical care is especially ill-suited for dealing with PTSD. Veterans from the Afghanistan and Iraq actions are suffering from this, and in unprecedented numbers, with about 1 in 5 Afghanistanian veterans and 1 in 3 from Iraq already seeking mental health services. And the complaint further alleges that federal government officials have improperly induced many soldiers suffering from PTSD to accept these personality disorder discharges, precluding veterans from obtaining disability benefits or receiving ongoing medical treatments because the disorder, as you said before, is then classified as a pre-existing condition. Now, Mr. Erspammer, there's 22,500 soldiers. They're going to reevaluate all those cases of these people who were discharged under the personality disorder discharge. And the complaint summarizes, unless systemic and drastic measures are instituted immediately, the cost to these veterans, their families, and our entire nation will be incalculable, including the broken families, a new generation of unemployed and homeless veterans, increases in drug abuse, increases in alcoholism, and crushing burdens on the health care delivery system and other social services in our communities. Now, for further information, please, if you have a pen, take these down. They want to hear from you. They want to hear from anyone who is having problems here. You contact the lead counsel for the plaintiffs, Gordon P. Erspammer. That's E-R-S-P-A-M-E-R. Gordon P. Erspammer. And his telephone number is 925-295-3341. And he has an email.
Give that one more time.
Okay. 925, Dr. Stan, 925 area code. 295-3341. That's in Walnut Creek, California. And he has an email. It's G. Erspammer, G-E-R-S-P-A-M-E-R, at mofo, M-O-F-O, .com. Other sources for information include Russell K. Terry, T-E-R-R-Y, CEO and founder of Iraq War Veterans Organization, Incorporated. Russell K. Terry, CEO, founder of Iraq War Veterans Organization, Incorporated, 909 area code, 495-6218. Repeat, 909-494-6218. And his email is webmaster at Iraq War Veterans, IRAQWARVETERNS.
All right, would it be easier if people were actually just to call your organization to get in touch with them?
Oh, they can call me and I can give them the same information.
Why don't you get your number out there so people could call you, and if they then want to get in touch with these others, they could do that rather than go through all of them right now.
Okay, and I've got something here that I think they should take down. You can view the whole complaint on your computer. I know only 1 in 6 veterans have a computer, but there's one website that they should take down, and this website is http://www.mofo.com/forward/docs/forward/pdf/forward/pdsd07723.pdf.
Why don't you just give out your telephone number there, Arthur, because a lot of people wouldn't have time to get that written down.
Okay, the best place to reach me.
So you can reach Arthur and Veterans for Constitutional Law, which is a great organization. How can they get in touch with you?
Okay, the best way to get in touch with me, you either reach us at Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited, Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited, and we are at 112 Jefferson Avenue in Port Jefferson, New York, Port Jefferson, New York, 11777, or call me at 631-474-4261, 631-474-4261, and we'll do all we can to help you.
All right, fine. I think there are so many veterans as more and more come home and get into the system and find out that it's like beating your head against the wall.
Oh, my God.
At least you can go and give Arthur a call. If you're out there in the listening audience and you have a question, our telephone number is 1-888-24-LIBERTY. That's 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. 1-888-24-LIBERTY or 464-8295. Well, Sydney, are you getting any help from any of the members of our legislature? Now, of course, they've all gone off on vacation, and sort of given the president a green light to go to war with Iran if he wants to, having voted to condemn Iran before they left for their complicity in supplying weapons to the insurgents in Iraq. But Sydney, where do you stand at all, as far as what's going on is concerned? Are you getting many veterans from the current war contacting you?
Yes, yeah, I'm getting many, many veterans right now from the current war contacting me. And we've done a number of programs with the Iraq War Veterans radio station. I've been on with them 5 times already. And I'm getting a number of people contacting us, and I keep telling them, just take your information, either send it to me and I'll forward it on to Morrison and Foster, or I'll give them Morrison and Foster directly and they can speak to Mr. Erspammer or any of his assistants there, and get them the information. They need more information. They need facts. They're gonna really go on this. They're not gonna... I don't think they're going to bilge out. The only thing that'll save the VA is if they get themselves a nice crooked judge. That's the only thing that can save them. And believe me, there's plenty of those around.
Well, I think it's vitally important that we take good care of these young men who sacrifice so much for our country. It's the least we can do for them, because most of them will never be the same again. But at least we can see that they're taken care of, and if they do have something that is treatable, why, of course, they can get treatment for it. Do we have any idea, of course, how many of these young men are coming back, say, from the military, in the National Guard, have been able to get their jobs, you know, back into, or are they getting out? Are they letting them out of the National Guard?
That's another big problem. A lot of people are being denied the jobs they were promised to hold for them. And there's not that much being done about it right now. You can put in a complaint to the government, but you can see how the government handles things like this. Now, you know, there's a journal called the National Law Journal, and before this law on lawyers took effect on June 22nd, they had an article in the National Law Journal that you may want to look that up. It was in the June 19th, 2007 National Law Journal. It's called The New York Lawyer, and the heading of it is Big Law Firms Unite in a Pro Bono Effort for Wounded Soldiers. We're really going after them now, Dr. Stan, and it's about time. This has been going on as far as I can remember. They say it's going on for better than 75 years. I've been in the battle since 1979. But it's going on for more than 75 years with the VA that we were not allowed an attorney for any of our cases, and the VA had 1,200 of their own attorneys. And this has been going on, my God, the VA just celebrated 75 years of infamy. And it's about time that something was done here. And now, since the law was passed, they've taken the handcuffs off, and we now can go to an attorney and put our case through.
And I think really this is so vitally important. Basically, the major veterans organizations, the American Legion, the Disabled American Veterans, so many of these organizations are in bed with the government,
yeah,
bribed by them, and so they refuse to support the idea that the veteran would have a right to an attorney representing him when he went into this veterans court. The government could have all the attorneys. They got 1,200 attorneys, and you have no legal representation. And they would actually put these veterans off for years, sometimes 6, 8, 10, 12, 20 years, appealing their cases, all part of a waiting game, simply just to wear them down.
Exactly.
Now, that is not an American thing to do. This is an example of total corruption at the highest levels of our government. And finally, apparently, they got the legislation through. Now a veteran can have an attorney representing him, and of course this is going to change everything, and of course the Disabled American Veterans and so many of the veterans organizations did everything they could to block that legislation.
Yeah.
But fortunately you got it through, Arthur. You're to be congratulated, and I just hope and pray this new lawsuit will begin to dramatize what really happens to the veterans.
You know, I'm proud to say that I was number one in pushing this through across the whole country. I was number one in getting this thing pushed through. I put everything I had into this, and even up to the last minute, there was danger of these two North Dakota senators taking this law and squashing it. And after the 22nd of June, there wasn't a thing they could do about it. It's law. Now, the other law that they have to get rid of, see, this gets rid of Section 5904 that said you cannot have a lawyer at the Veterans Administration. The other thing we have to get rid of is something called 511A. And once we get rid of 511A, that's the thing that gives VA finality in these decisions. Once we get rid of that, they have no place that they can hide. You know, there was an old saying by Joe Louis the fighter when he was fighting Billy Conn, you can run, but you can't hide. The VA has been running, and now they're going to find they can't hide because it's all coming after them right now.
Well, now, Chris, you're getting some pretty good press coverage as well. In other words, I've been reading in the press that a little bit of what we had never heard before, and that is the total of corruption and depravity and certainly grave indifference on the part of the Veterans Administration towards the lot of the suffering veteran.
Well, I'd like to give kudos to McClatchy News Service in Washington. Almost on a daily basis, they're bringing these things right out. McClatchy News Services.
Well, of course, we have good people out there. Certainly, they're buying up the news services as rapidly as they can. And let's hope and pray they do not buy up McClatchy and Salad's probably one of the last sources we have of getting the truth out. Believe me, Rupert Murdoch going to buy up the Dow Jones, the Wall Street Journal. I attended a meeting with one of the leading Christian leaders this weekend where he got up and said, well, everybody knows Rupert Murdoch is a great conservative. And I said to myself, I mean, with leadership like this in the Christian conservative movement, we certainly don't need any enemies. Rupert Murdoch is no conservative, believe me, ladies and gentlemen, and he will not save the Wall Street Journal.
I don't think.
Well, I think you've got 3 minutes to wrap up the program.
Okay, Dr. Stan, it's always a pleasure to go on with you and your program. And, you know, the news of this lawsuit, it's encouraging to all veterans out there. Now, the thing is, the veterans cannot be lazy about this. They've got to work on their case. They've got to get everything documented, and they've got to send it in. They can't say, oh, it'll happen, it's going to happen by itself. It doesn't happen by itself. You got to make things happen. And you guys out there, get off your behinds and do what you're supposed to. You want to win your case. You want to see the other veterans win their case. You want to bring this infamy to an end, what's happening with the VA. Now, I've been thoroughly in favor of taking the VA and putting it either in the hands of Social Security or putting it in the hands of the Government Accountability Office, which is the legal arm of Congress. And if it goes into either Social Security or the Government Accountability Office, I think our problems are going to be solved. Because in all the years of the VA, we have never had any secretary of the VA or chief administrator of the VA who has been pro-veteran. We've always gotten an administration clown to run this. And it's like one is worse than the other. They seem to get worse with each one we get.
Well, let's hope that you will get adequate justice for the veterans, that they'll begin getting what they're entitled to get in the way of treatment, and of course, hopefully, they'll be able to be returned to some sort of an effective productive members of society.
I hope your listeners out there are supporting your organization with donations, and we need them also because the donations will buy us more publicity. And the more publicity we have here, the less of a chance that the VA is going to get their power back. Right now, they're hamstrung. We've hit them with this lawsuit, and they're hamstrung. They don't know what to do next. Well, and we've got to keep them on the run.
Why don't you get your telephone number up one more time there, Arthur?
Okay, my telephone number for all you people who want to reach me, I'm Arthur Berklow, Executive Director here. I'm at 631-474-4261. And address
one,
is...
One more time, please.
Okay, it's 631 area, 474-4261, and we're located, it's Veterans for Constitutional Law Limited, and we're located at 112 Jefferson Avenue in Port Jefferson, New York, and our zip code is 11777, and any calls made to us, any letters written, will be answered, I promise you.
Good night. God bless, Arthur.
Thank you, and God bless you for your work you're doing, Dr. Stan.
Well, this is Dr. Stan, and we like to have Arthur on from time to time to keep us abreast of what's happening to our veterans, and with the hope that we can help him to get what these people are entitled to, because believe me, they made tremendous sacrifices for our country, and they seem to be simply being cast aside like an old shoe. Well, ladies and gentlemen, this is the time when I do need to remind our listeners that Radio Liberty is primarily listener-supported. We depend upon those of you who listen to our programs to help us as we reach out 5 hours every single day of the week and then on weekend programs to our network. We have about 60 outlets every week, shortwave, internet, satellite, and then the radio stations where we're heard. Our evening our network is really made of about 11 good stations, shortwave, internet. We're so fortunate to have an outreach, and we hope that many of you would want to be part of that outreach. And in the areas where we can reach the people, they begin to understand what is really going on and the spiritual forces behind what is taking place. So remember, if you'd like to get in touch with us, our telephone number, 1-800-544-8927. And then, of course, we hope that many of you will want to certainly get our talk on the Brotherhood of Darkness, our talk on the Forbidden Secret, the DVD on the Secret Mysteries of America's Beginning, and, of course, the other award-winning documentary, Riddles in Stone, The Secret Destiny of America. We hope you want to get the 4-tape set on the Supernatural, 4-tape or 4-CD set, the 4-tape set on the Military Commission Act, the 4-CD or 4-tape set on concentration camps, or the videos on concentration camps, America Behind Barbed Wire, or even better still, the concentration camp special. You'll never look at the world through the same eyes again after you've seen all of the videos that we have there, and of course the documentation. Ladies and gentlemen, there really are people who have a different view of the world. They think that they have the right to rule. They are a ruling elite, and they are motivated and energized by dark spiritual forces. If you'd like to get our 4-tape set on the Supernatural, 4-CD set of the book that goes with that, The Beautiful Side of Evil by Johanna Michelson. If you'd like to understand the demonic, and there is a demonic certainly sphere, The Hostage to the Devil by Father Malachi Martin, a Jesuit priest, and then the 4-tape or 4-CD set that goes with that, The Wisdom of Malachi Martin, and it's usually people like to get the two of them together, the 4-tape set and the book, because, of course, there's special considerations given. We do hope that many of you will certainly want to get our information on health and health subjects, because there's an organized effort to poison and eliminate large segments of our population. If you've never heard our 4-tape set, either 4-tape or CD set, The New Order of the Barbarians, you need to get it. If you have any question as to who has funded communism since its inception, that would be the DVD and or certainly VHS, The Best Enemies Money Could Buy, my interview with Professor Sutton. And, of course, if you have not yet seen the 4 newsletters we have on how the United States has funded communism since its inception and is still funding communism, because we need an enemy to rout the people behind the government. Let me suggest the Communist-Capitalist Alignment, pardon me, Alliance, Communist-Capitalist Alignment Alliance. It's available through Radio Liberty. It's simply a compilation of 4 newsletters, but so much excellent material there. And your job is to get the material. You have our permission to copy of it, and then to get it out. And we ask, of course, to our number, 1-800-544-8927.
You're tuned to the Global Star Radio Network. Thanks for listening.